was within the department itself, was there any, was there conflict concerning the nature of this new gymnasium that was going to be built and how?
Oh, no, we had more elaborate plans for it, we just didn't get them. We hoped to have unit 1, 2, and 3 out there. Unit 3 hasn't been built yet. Unit 1 is the swimming pool. Unit 2 is the gymnasium part and the teacher instructing part and the other labs and the biodynamics and houses the whole program of physical education. And unit 3 was to be on the other side, on the east side of the swimming pool. And that was basically to be for the women program. But now with a merger, Unit 3 is, as I understand it, is to be a recreational area on the East Campus.
Mm-hmm. Who were the faculty who were prominent in coming up with the design of the new natatorium and the Unit 2 gym?
They had a faculty committee made up of not only members of our faculty, but members of the total university faculty that would be involved in it, like people in recreation, building and grounds personnel.
Okay.
If we can for a moment now, we talk about facilities and that sort of thing. If we could move on to talk a little bit more pointedly about the program offerings of the Department of Physical Education. The intramural program, for instance, is that part of the physical education program? How is that coordinated together? Has that changed over time?
Well, actually, the intramural program was, I think I'm correct in this, was under the intercollegiate until it was divorced with the general program. And when we moved into the NAT in 67, it was taken over by the a board of control under the dean of students' office. They used our facilities. They had their offices there. They administered their program, but it was not a separate part of physical education.
So that the faculty did not have much to do with organizing the program.
No, they had a director of intramurals, who was Jack Nolka. Art Thompson was the director of intramurals before Jack Nolka, and they were the ones that initiated the intramural program.
So the Thompson was not a member of the faculty.
He was a member of the general physical education faculty.
I see.
As differentiated from the professional course physical education faculty.
And this is a sidelight, but is there in the minds of the faculty, is there sort of a clear distinction between being a member of the general faculty as opposed to the professional faculty? Mm-hmm. Does that mean something?
Yes, it means that each one of them wanted their own autonomy. Now let's put it this way. It was hard to get the people on the professional course faculty to teach in the general program, or the general program faculty did not want to teach in the professional course program. Why, we'll drop the subject. But this was the way it was. There was an individual autonomy there.
Okay, and Thompson goes back to the 30s, so that's been essentially the same structure.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And another question I was about to come up with is, why is there a separation of general and professional courses? Why, that goes back a ways.
Well, yeah, because the professional course is the preparation of teachers, and the curriculum itself would be entirely different from that of the general program. The general program was designed for participation by the entire student body in a recreational activity, in the basic requirement at that earlier time, as opposed to all the kinds of preparation needed to go out and teach the subject.
Now, you were mentioning earlier that in your own education in this department, that there was a lot more emphasis on science and so forth in your major, in your bio degree, than there is today.
Yeah.
Could you comment on that in terms of why this shift has taken place, or the desirability of that shift?
Yeah. I think the earlier requirements were due to the fact that so much of the physics, the physiology, the chemistry was involved in, was necessary to know about your own self, your body, how it operates, how it works, and what strains and stresses it can take. But I think that the change over the years from going from almost an automatic general science minor to a second minor if you wanted, or to a double major, whatever your preference, was made through the changes in what public school systems wanted in terms of a teacher. Some of them wanted a physical education teacher and a coach. Some public schools wanted a coach who would teach academic subjects. Now, I can recall when I went to the University High School, the basketball coach taught general science. The one-time basketball coach was also the head football coach. This was earlier, back before my actual time in high school. So the changes in public school education have made a change in what our requirements are. More public schools want to hire not a person who just works from, say, 3:30 to 6, because the law was that you had to be a teacher. You didn't have to have credentials to coach, but you had, in order to coach in a public school system, you had to be a teacher of that public school system.
Are you saying that the curriculum offering and the program offering of the Department of Physical Education has, in a sense, been dictated by the job market considerations?
To some degree. Who's hiring? What do the people want? Now, there was a time when, you were a coach, you were a physical education teacher, you taught general science in the school. Then there was a time when they branched out, we would like to hire a person who can also maybe teach math, or who could teach social studies in addition to teaching the physical education classes. Whether he coached or not, that was something else. He may coach. Or because of the number of students participating in sports activities, and one person not wanting to take full responsibility, or couldn't because of the overlapping seasons, couldn't take full responsibility for all of them. So they had to have personnel who were trained in physical education, maybe a minor. So they would have they'd want somebody who could teach an academic subject in physical education, or and coach, or the other way around. Then the picture has come out where health education is required in the schools. Who teaches health education? The physical education man? He does not have enough depth, or she doesn't have enough depth in health education to teach it. So we want health education people. So the health education people set up programs that would dovetail into our curriculum, so our people could handle coaching and also have a minor in health education and then could teach it, because we could teach in it with a minor in the state of Wisconsin then. Now in some cases you can't. Minor isn't legal. With the advent of school and community recreation, where the community uses the school facilities, the idea of recreation came into the picture. So we need recreation trained people. So then our area of concentration changed, or added on to, let's put it this way, in addition to the subject matter areas, health education or recreation.
I have a sense that what you're saying is that in some ways the program, correct me if I'm wrong, the program is a little more spread out and perhaps not as
thinned out in some areas.
Yeah, and not as rigorous, should we say, in terms of the curriculum in the 30s or 40s. There's a sense that among students, certainly, in my era,
they're given more opportunities to browse a little bit instead of having a cut and dried curriculum, a stereotype curriculum. And of course, it's much different now with a merger of the men's and women's department into one. The program has changed considerably. See, when the departments were separate, dance was the influencing factor in the women's program, the major in dance. They were nationally known, and that's where the greatest part of their enrollment was. But now that it's merged, curriculum. So it's now a Department of Physical Education and Dance.
When did this merger occur?
3 years ago. It'd be 1975, right?
Yeah. Has one of the policies that I've seen recently in the program is that certain types of course offerings within the professional area are often not duplicated in the general area. For instance, things like basketball or hockey are course work that a person generally interested in learning how to play better basketball or hockey has not available to him or her, because those areas are generally reserved for the professional field.
Right.
Has that generally been the case? And if so, why has that occurred?
Probably because in order to take those enrollments, played a part in it, those courses that were offered to the professional students who were training to be coaches and teachers of physical education, health and recreation, those courses were designed to prepare them to teach to others. The general program originally was to teach about a particular activity, the skills as well as playing in a particular activity. Now it's turned a little bit different from that to the benefits derived from and why you participate in these activities. What benefit is to your system, to your body, all parts of it in all aspects.
Mm-hmm.
And they go into the physiology of exercise of these sports, the mechanics of these sports, as well as the skills in playing them. So I think this probably not as much depth as we would go into them in physical education professional programs, because of the fact that they're shorter duration.
Now, some people might say that the professional courses know, the kinds of courses that are reserved simply for people who are on scholarship, who are athletes in intercollegiate programs, and that in part these courses are specially given to them to make their program a little simpler to get through. That kind of thing is often brought up in general conversation. Do you feel that's justified? Has that always been the case within these programs?
No, I think in some cases athletes have been misled. In other cases, this may be true, but I would not say so. For instance, the coaching staff may say, well, this athlete, we want him in physical education because we think you can get by here the best. But I've had, in my advising experience, I've had students who have come in, and they shouldn't be in physical education. They should be in English, because that's where his strength is. But they push him, he's an athlete, he's a good athlete, they push him into physical education. And maybe he wants to go into engineering, they'll push him into physical education. But if you look at the courses, if you take a catalog and look at the courses that a student in physical education has to take and compare it with any other, for instance, the same way you can compare it with home economics. They say home economics is a snap, but you look at the courses you have to take in home economics, it's not easy. And so I think it's a misunderstood statement. It's because everybody looks at physical education as fun. Sure, it's fun. It's activity. Anybody who was in his right mind would rather go out and play golf and tennis than sit home and indulge in a history book, as an example. Unless he's interested in history. Unless she's interested in history.
Do you feel that perhaps because of the pressure of big-time athletics, that there has been pressure to alter the curriculum in the professional field, or to shift it in some way, or to shift the treatment of athletes in some way? Is there this kind of a relationship ever?
No. In my own personal way, I've treated everybody the same way, whether he's an athlete or not. Mm-hmm. And in some instances, the athletes are better students than the general mill of students. We've had some students who, I can give you an example of one, I won't give any names, but one of our students was a good basketball player here, he was a black boy. At that time we had two curriculums, one was a certification program and the other one was non-certification, and they had to meet a certain grade point requirement, which he did not meet. And so he graduated with a non-certification degree. Well, he went out and another school out of state wanted to hire him as their basketball coach because he was a top-notch basketball performer here. And they came back to us with all the arguments they could to have him certified. No way would we do this because he just didn't make the grade from the standpoint of grade points. So he's treated anybody, a white person, the same way, or an Indian, we'd have the same setup. Mm-hmm.
Do you find that certain of the, you mentioned before that the physical education major is often something that is pushed on some of the athletes?
Very few, but some of them are. We've experienced, but it's very few. The percentage would be under 4 or 5%.
Oh, I see. So, okay, I was just going to ask if there was some certain of the sports that were particularly, seemed to be particularly involved in that as opposed to other sports. You know?
No. In some, I've heard that this has happened because the University of Wisconsin has such high academic standards that some athletes who have been recruited to come here couldn't make the entrance requirements, but they go to another school and take a course in recreational survey or knot tying or bait casting, and pass the courses and they're eligible to play basketball or play football or play tennis. I've heard this, and it's fairly reliable.
Mm-hmm. Is the faculty here, though, I gather from what you say, is adamant about the sort of academic standards that they try to set for them?
Oh, sure. Of course, you're probably familiar with the five-year program, too, for some of the athletes who are borderline cases. They bring them into five-year program, and this helps the athletes in this sense of the word. But you're going to find, I don't care what school or college you get into, you're going to find some students that are treated a little bit differently by specific instructors. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I would like to pursue some of the discussion, sort of the students in more detail in a moment, and also the sort of the relationship of Wisconsin to the broader national and international scene in athletics. But one or two more questions on this area of the program, and I think a particularly fascinating one is if you could try to lay out a little bit about the history of the relationship between women's FIAD and men's FIAD in terms of faculty, monies, all kinds of things that we can talk about.
Well, hard to do.
Well, perhaps we ought to start with you were mentioning before the thing that, correct me if I'm wrong, that perhaps led you to, prompted you to retire a little bit earlier, as you say, than you needed to.
I don't want to put that in the picture, though.
Okay.
No, I see what you're driving at. Okay. I think the women's curriculum was recognized mainly for its dance program because they had it was physical education and dance, but the predominance was in dance because they were known for their dance instruction, their choreography work, bringing in people outside from New York, key people and so forth, to put on displays, put on shows here, to do dance numbers in the Union Theater and so on. Probably in the earlier days, the curriculum was geared to elementary in the women's program, mainly because the women teachers at the elementary grades, I mean the teachers at elementary grades were women teachers. Not very few men went into elementary age because of salary-wise.
Now this dates even though the actual elementary education program.
Right. And where they had large school systems, where they had specialists teaching physical education, then the person at the lower levels was usually a female, not a male. Because the male teachers were all at junior and senior high school, along with female teachers at junior and senior high school. And so their program was geared probably to that direction. But then as more and more girls participated in physical education programs, why, they carried into the overall grades 1 through 12. Not saying they slighted grades 8 to 12 earlier, but the emphasis wasn't as great. They still had to prepare 8 to 12 grade teachers because there's a somewhat designed curriculum for grades 1 through 12 in chronological as well as the degree of activity, the kind of activity, and so on, and the learning experiences that youngsters have at the different levels. What is emphasized at different levels in sport and games?
Yeah. Now, we talked earlier about the problems in getting more facilities.
Mm-hmm.
The women were housed in Lathrop.
Right.
Before, and you were housed in the Red Gym.
Right.
What was their relationship to the planetarium project, and did that create a little bit of problem because, in a sense, because the women's department was being left behind?
Well, this is the reason for designing Unit 3 for the women at the same time that they designed 1 and 2, but they couldn't get them all at the same time. So the women were left at Lathrop. Well, then what happened was that with the way that HEW has worked, and with the women wanting to have equal rights in all phases of, I'll speak specifically of our program, why they came over to NAT, and they pushed for it, and they got it.
Were there particular people on the women's faculty who were especially strong in this?
Going this direction?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it was the general women's faculty. I think all of them. It's nice new facilities. I'd try to get over there, too.
Were there...
But when they found out that they weren't going to get their new unit right away, well, then come on over.
Mm-hmm. How did the men's faculty react to that? When it turned out that what they thought they would have for themselves was not...
We really couldn't do too much about it because our hands were tied. The building was for the total population of the university, men and women. And really it wasn't too much we could do because the central administration was the authority.
Were there any people on the faculty who wished they didn't have to?
Oh, sure, sure. There were several that were very adamant about not wanting to merge with the women.
Mm-hmm.
And this made it a very difficult situation because this is why there was perhaps considerable unnecessary rhubarb in setting up new curriculum, getting staff organized, scheduling facilities, and so on, at different times.
Now this is something that's been going on just recently within the last five years,
probably. 5 years. But I think it's worked out for the best. It's when federal government intervenes, and they tell you what to do, you got to do it or else you suffer.
Mm-hmm.
They've got enough teeth in their laws, though it may not be 100% the way it should be. You're going to have trouble. And of course, all over the country, they've gone to try to get everything they can already made for them rather than working into it. Like the men have spent so many years getting to this level of efficiency, but the women want it all right away with all the funds that go with it, all the budget and everything. And I think from my own opinion, I'm speaking purely for myself now, that Wisconsin's done a pretty good job
mm-hmm.
in bringing their program to a level where share and share alike.
I have the impression that the reason for the merger of the two departments came from outside, that is from the federal government, or at least...
Well, this was because HEW said that in order for you to get federal aid from the government, you will have to meet these requirements. These were published requirements.
Are you saying that the women's FIAD department would have been content to have stayed separate?
They would have. I think they would have.
That is,
and the men would have been happy to have them stay where they were.
Were there particular people within the women's FIAD department who were advocating this merger themselves on the, sort of on their own, as opposed to...
Let's put it in the other direction. Some of them were dragging their feet.
Were there any...
And there were some men that were dragging their feet, too.
Were there any men in the faculty who were fairly outspoken in favor of the merger or encouraged it in some way?
I think that the committees, the key people in the committees that worked in the various areas to get the merger established, I think those people were committed to wanting to have, and we could see the writing on the wall, there's no question about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way it was handled. And schools all over the country. La Crosse is an example. They have a joint department. They have a dean of physical education. They have an associate dean. They have a director of men's program. They have a director of women's program.
Mm-hmm.
Within the same... So we have now, but they've had that for how many years?
They had a merch program.
Sure. And there are a lot of schools around the country that have merged programs.
Sort of one more, this is sort of a quite off the way question, but related to program. When I was reading through the booklet that gives the history of the FIAD department, mm-hmm. they noted that in 1957 that combatives, as they called it, were dropped from the program. And I think I must have been referring to boxing, among other things.
Mainly. You see, wrestling is a combative, fencing is a combative.
Now, I know a little bit about what happened there, but could you, if you could, relate the story of that a little bit?
Well, I think the reason it was dropped, both as an intramural activity and as an intercollegiate sport and within the professional program, was the result of the death of the university boxer. They filled that field house. It's the only time, to my knowledge, well, I guess it's a couple of times it's been filled, but they filled that field house every time there was a boxing match. And at that particular time, we had four good boxers that were capable of knocking somebody out in any one match. And people were out there for the kill. It got to be a professional jamboree.
Community.
Yeah.
How was the faculty involved in this, or was this primarily under the aegis of the intercollegiate?
Intercollegiate, right.
Were some of the faculty in the FIAD department sort of leery of this program and I mean, did they see it?
No. As soon as this accident happened with intercollegiates, I think it was the Board of Regents that took it out right away, and that meant everything.
How did the faculty react to that? Did they feel that was proper?
No, we didn't. I guess we did throw out. We threw out our boxing class, too. We had no choice in the matter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think we would have liked to keep it in our teaching program, but certainly not as intramural or in the general program. Self-defense, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Now this sort of relates to the sports club
mm-hmm.
programs.
Right.
I know that
right.
people can take boxing now, and the sports club program was... Well, that was begun in the not too long after that.
No,
wasn't it?
Right. See, the
was that part, was that some way connected with this? Is that there was a need for having kind of semi-official program with sports that weren't either popular or...
Well, see, the there was not, it was not included in the sequence of sports and games that were in the intercollegiate list. But there were people who wanted to participate in soccer being one of them. Boxing. Another. Well, anyway, it was those...
Rugby,
yeah. Those sports that could not be financed by the intercollegiate program is basically the ones that were put on this other non-income sports program. And they were basically established by clubs, through the club organization. The individuals who wanted to and wanted to support it, if they wanted the financial help, I think they got some funds somewhere, but where, I don't know.
So the faculty did not have a lot to do with the sports club program?
No. We just had, in fact, Milt Bruin was the first sports club director. We moved out to the Nat, and he was gave up his football. That's what his job was, just to administer the sports club program. It's more of a, it's another aspect of intramurals, in a sense, where it's on a little higher level.
Mm-hmm. Briefly going back to the boxing incident, at the time, Wisconsin was one of the biggest schools in boxing,
boxing
in the country.
One of the top schools, yeah.
Was boxing still widely widespread in its in your competitive nature in the country at that point, or was it already starting to decline?
No, I think
in popularity.
I think, and it stayed in some areas. I think it stayed in the YMCAs, it stayed in the youth clubs.
But I mean, at the university
level,
was the Wisconsin incident particularly key in the demise of intercollegiate boxing?
I don't know if I can say yes or no on that.
No. Okay. Well, this is something that, from what I'm talking to, maybe it doesn't have much to do with, but for instance, what is currently, we've talked from time to time about the relationship of the FIAD department to the Department of Public Instruction, for instance, a little bit. Is there any sort of intimate connection there, or is that usually something that comes through at the level of the school?
No, I see, it goes through the public school level, because the Department of Public Instruction is the central location for all the public schools, administrators, teachers, etc. It doesn't have a tie-up to the university other than working relationships, to my understanding. In the same way, none of the faculty of the university are tied into the public though your credentials and your teaching and so forth are necessary. See,
because your father was a former...
Right, yeah. You don't need a teacher certificate to teach at the university like you do in a public school. And that's where the Department of Public Instruction administers the public school faculty.
But as you were saying earlier, though, that the curriculum program of the physical education department seems to be influenced more by the school's desires.
Not so much the school's program as what, in any one certain year, their faculty dictates. What do they need in the way of new faculty members?
So that DPI's influence is sort of indirect. Whatever the influence they have on the schools, then you see back in your department.
Right.
Okay. Now, I guess also from what we've been discussing, that the FIAD department here would not have a much relationship to the NCAA or the AEU or things of that.
Only on the basis of individual members who may have contacts with them and so forth.
Okay.
The only kind, now for instance, our acting, when I retired, our acting director, who is now just a full professor, is president-elect of the National Association, which has their main office in Washington, D.C. And usually it's at some person, not necessarily in college work, but usually as a college professor, man or woman, who gets that job, and you work it up the echelon. You're on committees, and then you do right. something here, and then you're elect, and you're second elect, and then you're first elect, and then you're president.
Now, which organization is this?
This is our National Association of Health, Physical Education, and Recreation.
So that the university, at least at this point, yeah. has a fairly prominent role in that organization.
Right. The member,
has Wisconsin Long had a prominent role in this group? Is this, has the fire department here had a long,
oh, yeah.
strong relationship in, sure. in the recommend group?
They do this because, for instance, now when I was president in 59 of our state association, we were, with our expenses paid, brought to Washington as president-elect the year before. And we had a week of committee meetings in the operation of state association. And then they have the national office in the Midwest district. They have seven districts throughout the state. In addition to each state association, and you work your way up, and that's the way the organization is set up. Well, NCAA is the intercollegiate phase of a program like ours.
Oh, I see.
And we have nothing to do with the NCAA.
No.
Other than, well, let's say a swimming coach might have some connection with it, because Wisconsin is a member of NCAA.
But Wisconsin has had a strong connection, strong directing influence on the American Association for Health, Physical Education, Recreation.
We've had key people who have, in the state, not necessarily in Madison, but in the state, who have had key positions in the national offices.
Now, okay. What about the Collegiate Physical Education Association? Has Wisconsin, the Department of Education here, played much role in that?
None whatsoever, because see, we're divorced.
No, no, not the NCAA, but well, what I have here is the Collegiate Physical Education Association. I don't know if that's a very important organization or not.
I don't think I know the interpretation of the collegiate. You mean from college to college?
Yeah, that is the American Association is broad based.
Right.
It's from throughout the whole curricular office.
Right, right.
But there must be, at least I believe there is, a separate organization for just the college level. Is that correct? That is.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah. Well, that's within the national office.
I see.
There's college level, and we have the same setup within the state. There's a college section for the state association in addition to the public school or elementary, or the state high school coaches association is very strong in the state.
Mm-hmm. Now the college association, I assume, goes back a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Wisconsin here, the association department here, have they had a strong impact on that mm-hmm. organization?
Very much so. Bob Francis in particular, as I mentioned before. Our first director, Bob North, was influential in that in the national office. Larry Rarick was influential. We have one or two or three now that work in various committees in the national office. I would say almost all of our faculty have some connection in some form, some committee, whether it be in research, or whether it be in administration, or whether it be in physiology of exercise, some tie-up, because of their rating as a physical education college in the country,
mm-hmm.
it has something to do with national offices, one way or another.
Now, does that what does this office do then? What has its function been?
They have coordinated programs. They have been a feeding house for new ideas. They publish a monthly magazine, Health, Physical Education, Recreation. They publish a monthly quarterly, four times a year, which has all recent research studies that have been completed.
So that by having key people
and being having a membership,
that the physical education department here then has been able to help set trends.
Right.
And within
sure.
The
and you had the amount you. You're a member of the National Association. You get output from it. You get input from faculties of colleges and universities.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. I guess I have one last area before we conclude. And I'm kind of interested in hearing your evaluation of the student body that you've seen over the years at the university in physical education, both within the general program, which I know you've had experience with, and within the professional program, in terms of their attitudes towards physical education and that sort of thing. You know, this is sort of a subjective area. Attitudes towards sports and fair play and sportsmanship and all those kinds of things.
My first reaction to that is that when I first started teaching on the Madison campus, the student body that I came in contact with were very sincere. They were there for a purpose. They wanted to get an education. They wanted to do the best job they could, and they wanted to get as much information as they possibly could, and they went out of their way to get this information. They were for a better term, I'll call them eager beavers.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of these people were veterans.
Quite a few of them were veterans. And they knew what their goals were. I think sometimes now, by making a big jump,
mm-hmm.
that up until, say, 10 years ago, that span in there, I think the students were a little, I really don't know what I want to do. And I really don't care. Hand it to me on a silver platter.
Hmm.
But I think it's turning back now to this other direction. I think students are realizing that an education is important. That if they're going to get anywhere, they've got to have the knowledge, they have to have the experience. And you're getting a better caliber of students.
Hmm.
Now maybe that the better caliber of student is due to the standards the university has set. But I really think that there was a downhill there for a while, and then it started picking up again.
Are the students who come to the university now in physical education, have you seen it? Have you detected any change, say, in their simply in their training, the previous training in sports and athletics? Are the students who come in now,
they're better
prepared. More mature as athletes, for instance, as in their skills?
Their all-around skill is better.
Mm-hmm.
When the students first came in, They're either football players, they're a basketball player, they're a swimmer.
This is, you're referring to the 40s.
Yeah, 40s, right. Now, and now as they come in, of course you're going to have the athlete who's a three-sport man or something like this, but generally speaking. Now, since most of the school, and the schools at that time, if you were out for sports, you were excused from physical education, you didn't have to go. Now, in most schools, well, they'll excuse you on the day that you're going to perform, like on a Friday or something like that. But in most instances, the students have been not excused from physical education, but they have to participate. They have to learn how to play badminton. They have to learn how to play volleyball, tennis, golf, if they choose. But they've already developed some degree of skill, so they learn it rather rapidly and quickly, more so than the non-athletes.
Mm-hmm.
But they still have a better all-around background in sports activity.
Mm-hmm. What about in terms of their attitudes towards sports and their, and how you perceive they see sport as part of the broader structure of things? That is, you know, in terms of, are they more competitive now?
I think it's on an individual basis per student. If the student is an athlete, and I won't classify all athletes this way, but if a student is an athlete, and he comes into an activity class, say tumbling, and he's a 250-pound tackle, he's not going to be as good in tumbling as the individual who's maybe 180 or 175, and maybe 5'10", something of this nature. But his mind is purely on football, and he doesn't care about anything else. He'll care about getting through school, and that's all.
This, you're saying this is something you see now?
Yes. No. So I see now.
Is that, do you feel that was something that you saw
no,
20
no.
years ago?
Mm-hmm. See, I think professional athletics has something to do with it, not just off-the-cuff comment.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he's any kind of an athlete at all, he's going to be looking for professional athletics where he can get the money.
Mm-hmm. I know that, in line with that, in terms of professional athletics and stuff, it must trickle down in some way at the university. Do you sense that, in some ways, that, you know, in gestures of sportsmanship of students, and, you know, just sort of what my parents would call just manners, but in terms of their attitude on towards other students, you know, towards non-athletes who are competing with them, and in terms of their attitude towards winning and that kind of thing, do you feel that there's been changes among the students that you've seen?
I don't think so. I think a student who's an athlete or who's been an athletic already has this developed into him, the desirable direction to go.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're going to see kids fly off the handle on a spur of the moment like this. Yeah, I do that too. If I am doing something in woodworking and I hit my thumb with a hammer, I let go once in a while. But this happens. But by and large, I think an individual is educated through athletics in good sportsmanship. If he's a good sport, if he's called for a violation on a basketball court, and he's called for a violation, he accepts it.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll hand the ball to the official and take his medicine if he loses two free throws to somebody or not. The individual who has not been indoctrinated into what good sportsmanship is, if he's playing in a pickup game and the official who's refereeing it calls a foul on him, he's apt to throw the ball at the official.
Is this...
And I don't see this in physical education people. Sure, everybody has their off moments, but by and large, I think most individuals who've been in sports have developed an attitude, a desirable attitude towards good sportsmanship.
Does the faculty as a whole, or has the faculty made, do they make conscious efforts to instill that in their students?
Indirectly, maybe not directly.
Mm-hmm.
But now, as an example, I might be talking about discipline and methods.
Mm-hmm.
In our intramural program, kids getting a scrap up there from two different fraternities. The student officials have to stop it. How do they go about doing it? I can use that as an example in my class, you see,
mm-hmm.
how good sportsmanship plays in the result of who wins or who loses, or whether an individual is put out of a game or he's banned for life in something this way or that way.
But as you say, are the students listening as carefully as they might have in the past in terms of the fact that professional athletics, which...
Well, I think they are now that they have a motive for going to school and wanting to get an education and wanting to go out and work with youth, as compared to a lean time in there when all they were thinking was getting an education and where I'll go from there.
Does the faculty have any formal routines of dealing with students in terms of, you know, student problems, complaints? And just in an informal sense, do you feel there have been any changes in the way the faculty has approached students?
I think it stayed pretty much the same in the sense that we have, in our counseling of students, we've had one advisor for freshmen, we've had one advisor for juniors, and they stayed with them that whole year. And so that over a four-year period, they would have four different advisors. And we complimented each other on the fine rapport that we had with our students. And the students even told us, I didn't get any help from another department that I was in. I was on my own. And we felt that we were doing the job in such a way, as I mentioned in the case of my dad with his faculty, that your name was Mr. Jones, or your name was Mr. Smith, that in class, that was it. If you went out and played golf with that young fellow, and he called you by a nickname, you accepted it this way. And he accepted it. This kind of relationship, professional or socially, we got along with our students real well in this respect.
You feel this has been a fairly constant?
Yeah, very much so.
Uh-huh. What about in terms of guidance of students now? You're indicating a close relationship mm-hmm. with students, but in terms of approach to guiding students through their program, that is fairly constant.
In the case of my dad with his faculty, that your name was Mr. Jones, or your name was Mr. Smith, that in class that was it. If you went out and played golf with that young fellow, and he called you by a nickname, you accepted it this way. And he accepted it. This kind of relationship, professional or socially, we got along with our students real well in this respect.
You feel this has been a fairly constant?
Yeah, very much so.
Uh-huh. What about in terms of guidance of students now? You're indicating a close relationship mm-hmm. with students, but in terms of approach to guiding students through their program, that is,
what direction they should go?
Well, and the degree to which it was something that you know, the faculty tend to direct them, and conscious direct them towards this kind of thing, or was it, has it been more of a suggestive nature, and has there been changes in that, as I'm saying? That
no, I think that we made an attempt in our relationship with the students to give them alternatives and let them make the choice. But we would, perhaps in an indirect way, try to steer them where we thought their strengths were
mm-hmm.
and where they'd do the best job.
When you say indirect, Well, this is the subtlety, I guess, of atmosphere that I'm playing with.
Yeah.
That you can always do it very nicely, but the manner in which you do it may be different. That's what I'm looking at. Has the manner of it been changed at all because of the changing faculty or that kind of thing? Or do you feel that it's still...
No. I can't answer that in the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I can before that, because the people who were the advisors were the same people all the way through. I took over a group of students the first year I was teaching, and I always advised that student level. Our coordinator always took care of the seniors. I always took care of the juniors because I had them, and that was the first time they went out in student teaching. And I felt that, and the other faculty members felt that we had a close relationship if I advised them in their student teaching responsibilities as a junior rather than, say, as a freshman. And the person who taught most of the freshman classes was the advisor for the freshmen. And we stayed this way as long as I can remember. Now, since the last 3 years where there's been a jumbling around, when a new person came in, there's only one case that I know of. Well, I was our new person came in and took over the responsibility of advising. We kept the same people all the time, from year to year. I don't know whether we got in a rut or
had a good thing.
Had a good thing going, but no. The dean, present dean, has commented our faculty on the good relationship we have, and Dean Quinn the same way.